This program was recorded at InterVarsity's Following Christ Conference, held in Chicago, December 27th through 31st, 2008.
The Care and Feeding of a Technical Life by David Gill.
I was just going to ask him a couple questions so you get to know him. So, Dave, tell us where you're living. Do you have a family, kids, and things like that?
I live in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I have been married for 13 years, I'm still married, and I have two kids, a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old.
So you're at Sandia, so what are you working on in one or two lines?
In one or two lines, I work on developing and researching precision fabrication methods for small components, both sort of the kind that you would find in a good watch, that kind of component, as well as micro-optics to interface with microelectronics.
So when I think of Sandia, I think of nuclear bombs. So can you explain, how does your work relate to nuclear weapons? And did you have to struggle with that as a believer in two or three words?
Okay. Yes. Some of what I do does relate to that. Sandia has the mandate to do all the non-nuclear components of nuclear weapons, which is most of them. And so I did have to think about that when I was going there, to think about, is that a technology that a Christian should be working in? And I spent a long time thinking about that and praying about it, and the place that I came down was on the side of, this may not be the ideal technology to have in the world, depending on your views, but it is a technology that exists in the world, and it's one that we cannot abdicate. It is one where we need to have Christians who are involved in the understanding of these and to make sure that use and all of those things are controlled well. It's not an area that Christians can abdicate and leave to somebody who does not have the moral compass that we do.
Good. All right. Well, let's hear from Dave as he talks about the care and feeding of an engineer.
All right. Just to start off, we had lists going back and forth about who is in this track. So for all of the speakers who are here and here, could I get a show of hands of how many of you are grad students? All right. Lots of grad students. How many are faculty? All right. Good number of faculty. How many are professional? And how many are unprofessional? undergrads. Postdocs? All right. Okay, we're getting a little bit too many categories. All right, so as I talk tonight, I think that this has aspects that deal with where we all are. And so if I neglect to say a category at every single juncture, please think about how it might apply to you and just carry it to your juncture and don't be don't take it as not applying to you because I didn't happen to mention faculty or didn't happen to mention undergrads or postdocs or unemployed or all of this. So anyway, my focus tonight, as David mentioned, is how we flourish as technical people. The idea is the rest of the talks are going to talk about how our technology is within God's call, how we discern what technology to create, and how to go about shepherding that technology, and then how we would apply technology within our faith. But I think that there's an assumption there that for us to even care, we have to be flourishing ourselves. We have to be growing and have a good walk with Christ so that we have something, a well from which to use that we can go out. And so I want to talk about that tonight. So I want to talk about three main things. The first is your call to the technical life and your wherever you happen to be right now. The second area is about spiritual habits, and the third is about living as a child of grace. So in the first, your call to the technical life, I think that that could be have a subtitle of what have I gotten myself into now. And so a lot of times in a conference like this, people will come into the conference with questions like, is engineering or technology or grad school or professor, academia or professional school, is this even right for me? You might have other questions, especially in early in a career or in graduate school, of how is sleep deprivation glorifying to God? You may have questions like, if this is where God wants me to be, why is this so hard? And a question that I had to ask when I was in graduate school was, does God really care about the precision fabrication of injection co-molded micro-optical features and optical polymers? And so that's probably not your question, but you might have a similar question. I think that there can be a lot of frustration in where we are and a lot of questioning of what we're doing. This is a grad school and early career are hard times. I have a story of that. My wife is an InterVarsity staff member with graduate and faculty. And so we often have graduate students over to our house. And we had a group of people over at our house, and my three-year-old, James, walked up to one of the women who was over, and he was in the habit at that time when he was three of asking, "What's your plan?" And he asked the person, "What's your plan?" And she nearly burst into tears, and she said, "I don't know. My research won't work, and I don't know what my topic is, and I can't get a job, and I don't know if I even want to be doing this." And, you know, three-year-old, that's kind of heavy. So he sort of looked at her, and he looked at me, and he said, "Dad, what's your plan?" And I said, "I think I'm going to have dinner now, James." So that was more on the scale that he was working for, but I think that was really a window to what people can be feeling in that portion of their life. Why am I here? What am I doing? So I want to encourage you. That in your engineering career, I think that you'll find in the following talks that we have that God really does have a place for you to be there, and there is a real call for you to be in engineering or a technical career and in graduate school. And God can use you in amazing ways there, whether they are academic ways or spiritual ways or a mixture of both. And I think we'll hear about both of those, or both of those combined together. I wanted to be an engineer since I was, as early as I can remember, 3, 4, 5, something like that. I love to build with Legos. I love to take things apart. When I was 6, I took apart my alarm clock because it wasn't working. It was an electrical alarm clock. I had no idea what I was doing. It's amazing I didn't kill myself on the capacitors that were in there. But I took it apart, and I put it back together, and I still have that alarm clock. Now, you don't want to use the snooze button because it's reaching straight into 120 volts. But, you know, that's okay. You know, it was what I wanted to do. And I got into my master's program at Purdue, and I was programming 18, 20 hours a day. And that was not what I wanted to do. I found out very quickly that planning the program was exciting and debugging was not what I was built for. I enjoyed about a day of debugging, and then the next months were painful. I was contacted about a position at Caterpillar there in West Lafayette. And it was for manufacturing and not design. And I thought, well, I've always wanted to design, but maybe I'll try this because this programming is certainly not working out for me. And I went to Caterpillar, and I worked in the manufacturing, and I found out there that I liked making things. That was what I really enjoyed doing. Designing them, optimizing them was fun, but what I liked to do was to take that idea and to make it into metal or plastic or whatever it was. So God really used that time to show me how I was built and what I like to do. And I learned a couple of things from that that I think are valuable lessons. The first was trust, that if your spiritual life is healthy, you can trust God that he's going to provide, and he's going to provide in any case, but you can really find ways that God will provide and ways that you don't expect all the time. I learned to listen. God has a reason for you being where you are. It may or may not be academic, but he had me at Purdue for a time of spiritual growth. That was one of my greatest times of spiritual growth. And it was a fantastic time from that standpoint. And I learned a lot of things that I didn't want to do, which was important as well. I think the frustration that I felt there and the frustration that you may feel in your career is part of life. We live in a fallen world. We know Christ, and we know we have a vision for what could be. And there's a tension there and a frustration that comes with that. We know what could be. We know what we experience. And that can be uncomfortable. There are always questions, I think. It doesn't go away when you get a job somewhere. There are always questions, you know, in academia. Should I move to a different university? Am I going to finish the 10-year process? Would I be better if I were in a different department? In a career, there's always the questions of, should I go back to academia? Should I go somewhere else? Those questions are always going to be there. But God is at work wherever you are, and that's very comforting. And God can use us powerfully in any situation. I think another point of comfort that you will find from this conference is that you are not alone, either in wondering if you're in the right place or in following Christ in your career. And I hope that that will be an outcome of our small group times, that you will find and make relationships that span the country and the world with others who are trying to do what you're interested in doing. My second section is talking about forming life habits. And it could be subtitled Living, Not Just Surviving. Wherever you are in your career, it is easy to view this time as just being a season. In grad school, I think that this is often a habit that is formed very quickly. You are so focused on what you're doing, it is easy to take that time and to think, this is just a season. I can suspend spiritual habits. I can suspend relationships. I can suspend a lot of things, and I'm just going to focus on this problem, and I'm going to study it to death. Because that is what you are being requested to do. That is what you are being asked to do. It turns out that that doesn't happen just in grad school. If you go the academic route, you get it immediately into tenure, and it seems like it's just a season. If I can just battle through this, you know, I'll put all these other things aside and focus solely on this, and I will get there. If you get into a career otherwise, you can get into that job, that first job. Well, I really have to perform well here. I'll just focus on this. I'm going to put all these other things aside. That happens all through life, I think. You get to points, marriage, kids, new jobs, other commitments, you know, coaching soccer, whatever else happens to be there. It's easy to take any point in your life and view it as just being a season and push all those other things to the side. And I think that it's important to not push those things to the side, but to instead form those spiritual habits wherever you are in whatever season you're in. Three of those that I have seen, especially in grad students, being things that are pushed aside and that I want to encourage you to do. The first is stewardship of your money. Graduate school in early career is often not a prosperous time, but God didn't ask us to be stewards of our money only when we had lots. He encourages us to do that all the time, to always be stewards of the resources that he's given us. A story of that is when I was just starting out working at Caterpillar, and my wife was in graduate school, and I was working all day and then working on my dissertation or my master's thesis at night. We both felt really called to a certain thing that a one-time giving opportunity, and we both felt called to the same amount. And so we thought, well, I don't know how we're going to do this, but we have to do it because we both felt that we had been called to it. So we figured out a budget, and we figured out, well, maybe we can cut here and cut here, and we can get that to work. And so we made the commitment that we would do that. The next week at Caterpillar, I got called in to my manager's office, and he said, well, you've been here less than a year, and the rule at Caterpillar is that when you've been here less than a year, on your first merit review, you don't get a raise. But for some reason, you've gotten a raise your first year. And so that raise was half of what we had committed to. So we thought, well, this is nice. You know, maybe we can sacrifice a little bit less, or it makes this whole thing seem a little bit more doable. And the next week, my supervisor called me in, and he said, so there's a hard and fast rule that you don't receive two raises in the same year at Caterpillar. But it turns out that Caterpillar goes out every 3 to 5 years and does a market survey to make sure that their people are getting paid sort of what other people are getting paid to be competitive in the marketplace. And so you're going to get a bump that is equal to the first one that I gotten. So those two together were the amount that we had committed, like plus or minus $10. It was really amazing. So I'm not saying that that's normative at all. I don't think that that's what God calls us to do. But I think that God calls us to be good stewards of the resources that he's given us. And if we are truly listening to him and faithful to his call, he will provide. And he's gonna do that. I think it's important in this time to focus on stewardship of your mind as well. It's a time when you are learning all about your technical field, and you are learning the basis for the technical aspects of the rest of your life. But it's also a time that's important to learn about the basic aspects of your faith, to build that for the rest of your life as well. There are a lot of ways to do that. I think it's important to be in a Bible study, wherever you are, in whatever time, to be focused on the Word and to be growing in your Word and in a community of believers. And the third is stewardship of time. Time is really tough, both in graduate school, early career, early family, late career, late family. I don't think it ever gets any easier. It seems when you're in the middle of grad school, I felt like when I was in grad school, there's no way that I can have this kind of demands on my time. Grad school was hard because you'd never done enough. You know, I was studying this thing, and the more you learn about it, the more you learn how much you don't know about it, and you want to learn these aspects, and you want, you know, any time you're not working on it, you feel horribly guilty about it. But it turns out that the rest of life doesn't get any easier. Time is always something that is being demanded of you, and there are many aspects of life where you've never done enough. But I want to encourage you to steward your time as well. Steward your time with attendance of church, with attendance of a community of believers where you can grow, where you can change. Steward your time with investment in other people, and steward your time in Sabbath. When I was in my master's program, I wasn't very good about Sabbath. I worked a lot on the Sundays, and which was what I would have taken as the Sabbath. And I went to church regularly, but you know there were always things that had to get done because Monday was the day that everything was due, so there was always work to do. And in my PhD, I focused on having a Sabbath and really taking that day to try to focus on the Lord and to withdraw from my work and to focus on the other aspects of my life. There are lots of good books out there on Sabbath, lots of things that can help you in learning about that. So I learned a bunch of things from that Sabbath time. One was that the rest and rejuvenation of that Sabbath time made the rest of all of my life better and work better. My work was better. I had more ability to focus on that work. I've seen that a lot. I saw that at Caterpillar. The people who were there working all the time did really poor quality work, and they did much less work than the people who worked a reasonable schedule and understood how to rest and how to find time outside of work. In that investment in time, in the stewardship of your time, you'll see great things happen, really fun things. When we were at Purdue, we had a Bible study, and it was a seeker Bible study. We were hoping that it would be, and in fact, a Chinese student came to that Bible study. It was a Bible study on John, and you can imagine that a student who comes and hears John for the first time, you start out in John 1:1, and it is just the most confusing mess. And the wording is hard, and everything is difficult, and it's there are all these secondary meanings. It's not really quite what it looks like. It seems to be self-redundant all the way through. The part of John that we were singing about tonight, it's redundant, and yet it's self-conflicting. It's terribly confusing. But then we unpacked that through the semester, and that was the greatest reward of my master's program, was seeing that student come to understand what John 1:1 meant, what the whole thing meant, and what the story of the Lord was. And that was because of stewarding our time, taking that night to not work on the study, but to focus on the Lord and on investing in others. The habits that you form wherever you are right now will be important to the rest of your life. Good or bad, you will form habits right now, and they will continue on. The final point is I want to encourage you to live as a child of grace. How many of you have read Culture Making, the book Culture Making by Andy Crouch? Have any of you read that? Okay. There are a number of different books about culture that are interesting. I would encourage you to go buy a copy of Culture Making. It's next door for $10. It's an incredible deal, and it's a very good book. It's very good for people in engineering and technology because it affirms what you're doing. He says in the thesis of the book is that the way that we change culture is to create new culture. The way that we create culture is to create cultural goods. Those can be things like music, or it could be art, or it could be something like that. But it could be iPods or Volkswagens, or there are all kinds of things that can be cultural goods that can have an effect on culture. And so he is calling Christians to create cultural goods. So that's pretty neat. But he, in the application in the third section of the book, he has the concept of living as a child of grace, which I think is a really good way to approach our role as technology creators. So living as a child of grace has a couple of things, a couple of aspects to it. One is understanding that all that we do and all that we know is an incredible gift from God. It is a gift of God's grace that we were allowed to participate in the creating process. The second part of living as a child of grace is to do that living at the edge of your ability, so that your efforts, however grand or meager they may be, you can see God coming alongside and multiplying those efforts, so that you can see
you know, I was not able to do this on my own or not able to have the effect that I saw. And God coming in and giving me that grace that caused this to be so much of a bigger thing than I could have made. That's a great place to be. And then the concept goes on to living at the intersection of grace and the cross. So doing your engineering or doing your technology at this place where God is coming in and multiplying what you're doing, and doing that at the intersection of the cross. And so that means doing it where you are at the intersection of hurting humanity. So that point where you are working towards meeting the needs of the hurting humanity that's around us. You are not trying to hurt humanity. That sounds wrong. But trying to meet the needs and trying to change the pain that is humanity. And that can be somewhere far, far away. That can be in the lab where you are right now. That can be in your job where you are right now. There is hurting humanity all around us. And so I would encourage you for those three things that in your, I want to encourage you in your call to the technical life. And I hope that you will see through Following Christ 08, both the plenary sessions and the sessions in here, that God values you and your call to the technical life. I want to encourage you to make those life habits now. Don't view it as just a season, but to do those things now. And then finally, to live as a child of grace and to look for the intersection of that and the cross. So that's all I have. We're going to have some small group time. And
are there one or two questions?
I was wondering how you think about your current job and working at the intersection of the cross. Do you unpack that? I just gave you an example.
Yeah, so it's difficult to find where it is at the intersection of the cross. I would say I'm still wrestling with that in some ways. One thing that I work on is the systems that make a nuclear weapon not go off at the wrong time, in the wrong place, by the wrong person, or be able to have to be stolen and operated and or, you know, go through any cataclysmic event and go off. And so some of what I do is to remove that fear and to try to remove those bad, terrible, terrible consequences that could happen. But I think it's something that is constantly a challenge.
So maybe to follow on, was that a conscious direction you took? Or was that something that now you reflect back on and you see that God has brought you to that place in your...
It was somewhat a conscious. It was a conscious effort to go that way instead of other ways that I could have gone in other projects. And I, because of the freedom that I have to choose the projects, I write grants for the projects that I work on. I'm able to direct them because of that.
Last question.
My best examples are not from engineering at technology. They're from times when I've been working on other things. So I don't have a really good example from engineering and technology, but I think that we'll see them throughout the week or the few days here. And so I'll think about it, and if I come up with one, maybe you can ask again in the panel session. But also, I think we'll hear as we go through some other opportunities.
I'll give you an example of when God is not multiplying your efforts because you're on your own. I was recently bought some software to record all the old LP records that I got from my dad. of classical music, and I'm recording these records, and it takes a long time to record all these records. And my wife commented to me, says, "I'm really not enjoying this music. It's so hyped up, you know." And I'm like, "Okay." So anyway, I'm going through this. I spent 2-3 weeks on this. Right now, at that point, you know, I put on a choral piece, and I realized they all sound like Mickey Mouse singing. And then I look at the record player, and all this time it has been on 45 RPM, which is for singles, instead of 433. Right, and I think there was something that God was teaching me about, you know, I need to work in His grace and His power. Otherwise, we can do all this work, and it's all for naught. So, all right, so we're gonna go.